God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. Today, Brother Hutchings and Dr. Larry Spargimino begin a series of programs on the prophetic book of Daniel. It'll continue into next week, ending on November 2nd. Brother Hutchings, how will you and Brother Larry handle this important book of the Bible?
Thank you, Brother Jerry. This is not going to be a verse-by-verse study because we don't want to devote 2 or 3 months to a study of this one book. I know we have done so in the past, but, you know, we live in times when we read in Scripture, the end time would come as a rush of events. And I think that where we today, and we have so many topics and issues that we need to bring to the attention of our listeners, because this is a Watchman on the Wall program. It was so founded in 1933, and it's always been a Watchman on the Wall program. And what does a watchman do? Well, we read in Ezekiel that a watchman warns the inhabitants or populations of the cities about coming dangers. That's what a watchman is. That's his job. And we have always been diligent to do that. And we continue to do that today. But I wrote a book on Daniel some years ago. I think it was originally about 400 pages, and it's been reprinted several times, but it's been out of stock for a year or two now. So this last month, we decided to put back into print, and we have a new updated edition out that Brother Jerry will tell you how to get a copy at the close of the program today. But Dr. Spargimino and I are going to be looking at the book of Daniel, the special parts of Daniel that apply particularly to our day. Of course, we will have to reference some historical parts of the book, of course. But we're going to be dealing mainly with that part of the book of Daniel that coincides with the book of Revelation for our day. We will be looking at particularly chapter 3 and chapter 7 and some of the more important chapters, but part of the chapter we will just summarize. Of course, the book of Daniel is a history of Israel as Israel's relationship to the rest of the world and the coming event. After all, Jesus said the Jews would be scattered into all the world until the time of the end or the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled, and then they would be gathered back into the land. And we see that happening today. I'll soon be leading my 54th tour to Israel. And in going to Israel, you will find Jews coming back from every nation in the world. Of course, that's not the ultimate fulfillment of what the Bible says about Israel, but I think it is the beginning of the prophecies that are fulfilled for Israel in the end time. We read that all nations would come against Jerusalem, which that happened. But going back into the history of Israel, we know the book of Hosea depicts God's relationship with Israel through the relationship of Hosea to his concubine wife. And the relationship between God and Israel was close at times, and God blessed the land and brought them out of captivity back into the land, gave them a good land, and of course blessed them. But at times, as we all do in our own personal relationship with God, there are times when we fail God, and of course he has to instruct us and correct us, and he did the same thing with the nation of Israel. In the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah saw serious days ahead for Israel. I think that was around 660, 670 B.C. I think at that time, Assyria had already taken the northern kingdom, Israel, into captivity. And we read in history how they were treated. And I've been there to Nineveh on the wall to the kings. And you see how they treated the Jews there in caricature and fed them to the crocodiles and sawed them into in logs and so forth and so on. But many did return to the northern kingdom. And the southern kingdom, Judah, took notice for a while and did repent and get a closer relationship with God and worship at the temple. And we read that under Josiah, Josiah was crowned king, and the first thing he did was go into Jerusalem and closed all the houses of the homosexuals and chased them out of town and cleaned up the country and called the people to worship. And there was a revival in the land. And God told Josiah, you're the best king, or one of the best kings that Israel ever had, but the country has gone too far. I cannot forgive them once more, but I'm not going to let you see what's going to happen to your country. And, of course, Josiah was killed shortly thereafter. And in about 605, I believe it was Dr. Spurgeon, the fulfillment or warnings of Jeremiah were realized, and the Babylonian kingdom came in, I believe, and took over the city.
Yes, the Babylonians had a siege of Jerusalem. King Jehoiakim, his family, his nobles, including Daniel, were taken to Babylon. That was in 605. And then we know that Daniel and his Hebrew companions were trained to serve Nebuchadnezzar. That's from 604 and 603. So all of this happened in space and time, and it is historical. And of course, we know that the historical setting of the book of Daniel is the Babylonian captivity. The book opens after King Nebuchadnezzar's first siege of Judah in 605, and it was around that time when Daniel and his three Hebrew friends were brought to Babylon.
Didn't King Nebuchadnezzar put on the throne just some puppet kings to rule there for a while before he destroyed Jerusalem?
Right, that's correct. Actually, Jerusalem was not finally and fully overrun until 586. And so there was that initial invasion in 605, and Nebuchadnezzar put some puppet kings on the throne. Judah rebelled again, and so there was another invasion in 597. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar tried to work with the people of Judah, but they rebelled. And finally, in 586, he invaded the city and destroyed the temple.
Now, I believe the last king was Zedekiah, the last puppet king, and he didn't please Nebuchadnezzar or the Babylonian rule. We don't know what all his problems were, but we read that he must have angered the Babylonians. What happened to him?
His eyes were put out, and he was put in prison. He was shamed, and he was disgraced. And I think this was actually the ultimate response of the king of the Babylonians to show that, hey, I am ruler over you, and anyone who crosses my path and who will not succumb to my rule, this is what's going to happen.
And I believe that he killed Zedekiah's sons in front of his eyes, in front of him, and then he put out his eyes, so the last thing that Zedekiah would remember was his sons being killed. I tell you, those were cruel people in those days. They didn't mess around. Jerusalem, we read, was pretty much trashed. The temple was also demolished, and the holy vessels, all the vessels, including the cups and silver cups and gold cups and all that, which were used to worship the Lord, they were taken back to Babylon along with many of the city. Now, they just didn't take everyone back. They took the younger people back, the one that was more healthy, the one that was able to serve, and they took the educated people back too. You know, that's not unusual because you remember after World War II, we brought the German missile experts back over here to help us get our space program going. And Dr. Wernher von Braun was, I believe, one of those. And so they took the most healthy and the best educated, and they also allowed the Edomites, the descendants of Esau, to come into the land and take the place of those who were gone. This was typical. It happened again later, but this was the first time the descendants of Esau were allowed really to come into the land and take over. And this was a fulfillment of judgment that was to come against Israel also. But among those taken back to Babylon, there were four young men. And we read they had been schooled in science. They were well educated. So these were young men that the king could use. What about them, Brother Larry?
Well, at this time, Dr. Hutchings, I think it's very interesting. 605, Daniel was probably only about 15 years of age, and he showed a remarkable amount of or degree of maturity. Of course, it was Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who were taken. The Bible says that they were well favored. They were very intelligent. The king thought, well, these are the kind of people that I can use in my kingdom. And so the king tried to completely brainwash them. They were taught the Babylonian system. They were going to be fed some special food. They were going to be well fed. And sure, that King Nebuchadnezzar said, well, I'm going to win their hearts to my way of doing things. And of course, we know that they were faithful Jews. And so, you know, I think that there's a tremendous lesson here for us today, because we, like Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego, were living in a very hostile world, and they were not corrupted by the culture in which they found themselves. And I think that's a good example for us today. We have to stand strong.
Yes, and we read that they even learned the language. So they were sent to school. Probably took them 2 or 3 years to learn the language, the ways, and they were going to be used in the king's court. They were the higher echelon. They were going to be advisors in his court and helpers. And of course, that's still not unusual today, because presidents, they have their special advisor about foreign affairs. And this was part of the plan, and Israel had now become part of the Babylonian Empire. So these young men were important for many reasons, and they were put in a special section of the court. I think they were probably made eunuchs. What do you think?
There's a lot of scholars who believe that, and I think that's a pretty common view, and that, of course, would fit with Nebuchadnezzar's idea of having complete control over them. As a matter of fact, he changed their names, Dr. Hutchings, so that their names would reflect the pagan gods of Babylon. For example, Daniel means God is my judge. His name became Belteshazzar, and that means Bel, that is a Babylonian deity, Bel protect him. Hananiah, which means God has been gracious, became Shadrach, the command of Aku, speaking about a Babylonian deity. Mishael means who is what God is, became Meshach, who is what Aku is. And Azariah, meaning the Lord has helped, became Abednego, servant of Nebo. And I just can imagine how those young men, their skin must have curled to have those pagan names applied to them. But so probably being made eunuchs, being fed the king's food, being dressed like Babylonian youth, and given these very abominable names. It must have been a very, very difficult situation for these four young men.
Certainly, we can just imagine. And they were put in charge of the man who had charge over the eunuchs. And, of course, being in the king's court, the king can be assured that they was not going to be running after the women of the court and be causing those kind of problems. He was going to make use of them. They were to eat the king's food, even. And they had a problem with that, though, didn't they?
They really did. In fact, the man who was in charge of the situation was very concerned that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would not eat the king's food. But we see from Daniel 1 verse 15 that after that regimen, Daniel and his friends actually looked better and healthier. Now, I don't think that's a biblical endorsement of vegetarianism, although some people might, but I think it certainly shows that because they were faithful to God, God was able to sustain them. And so the one who was in charge of them said, well, okay, you know, you don't have to eat the king's meat. You look fine the way you are, because he was afraid that the king would say, hey, what are you doing to these guys? They look horrible. But here, God preserved them, and they looked healthier than even before.
Yes, and the reason, of course, Daniel and his three companions were not eating the king's meat, because this was the best meat in the land, all right, the best lamb, the best beef, but it was meat that had been offered to idols. They would take the good beef and best mutton and offer it to the Babylonian gods, and it was the best meat in the land, so they would just take it into the king's table and serve it to the king in his court. It was good meat, but Daniel and his companions said, no, we can't do that because it's been offered to heathen gods. They said, well, all right, if you don't want to eat the meat, all right, so they ate a diet of pulse, which was, I suppose, vegetables and nuts and fruits, whatever. But they got along very well, and they were the best in the land. So now then, they were in the king's court, and they were to take care of the king's business. Now then, there was something arose that disturbed the king. The king had a problem. What was the problem?
Well, the king had a dream. Reading in Daniel chapter 2, the first five verses, it says, and in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, this thing is gone from me. I forgot my dream. If ye will not make known unto me the dream, with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Now, Dr. Hutchings, that was one mean dude.
Yes, and of course the Chaldeans, wise men, were supposed to take care of it and tell the king what he had dreamed and the interpretation of it. And of course they all had a meeting and said, hey, this is impossible. And so they told the king, said, no king, no ruler would ever demand of his wise men such a thing. You ask it to do something impossible. How can we know what you dreamed? And tell us a dream, and then we'll tell you what it means. He said, no, you'll just think of something to tell me, to placate me. Give me some kind of interpretation. So if you tell me the dream, then I know you can tell me the proper interpretation of the dream. And of course, they couldn't do it. And so a decree went out, and the whole court of wise men that there were council, we don't know how many there were, but we know there must have been quite a few. And Daniel and his three companions were included in the court of those who advised and counseled the king. Therefore, Daniel and his companions were also going to be killed. And so the word came to them that they would also going to fall under this rule or judgment. And so they got together and decided that they better do something about it. What did they do?
Well, it says that the four young Jews got down on their knees before God for a session of prayer. Now, that's a good time to pray. They sought God's mercy on their behalf. They knew that if the dream was ever made known to them, it would only be through the mercy and grace of the Lord. And so here, Dr. Hutchings, we have an example of literally placing one's life in God's hand. And Daniel 2 verse 19 says, "Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven." Wow, what a story.
Yes, indeed. And we read that they had a prayer session and went to the Lord in prayer about what all this was going to mean. You know, when we have troubles in our own land, you know, with our own government, and we think that everything is wrong and we don't know what to do, I think these three Jews give us an example of what to do under extreme circumstances. As we read in 2 Chronicles 7:14, "If my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and heal their land." I'm quoting that from memory, so if I missed a word or two, I'm sure the listeners will understand. In any event, God gave these young men, and especially Daniel, the interpretation of the dream. And on the next program, we are again going to be studying from the second chapter of Daniel and what this dream means. God gave this old king the dream, and he told Daniel what the old man dreamed and what it would mean. And you know what this old king dreamed way back there? Part of it is still relative today, because the fulfillment of that dream, the end of it, is still taking place today. And we're going to go back on the next broadcast and look at this old king's dream and what it meant to the nations of the world. So you be listening. But our new update on Daniel is just out. And here comes Brother Jerry to tell you how to get a copy. I think it's something over 300 pages. And we'll be back with you tomorrow as we look at King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the fulfillment of it.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. To get the updated commentary on Daniel, which is entitled Daniel the Prophet, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008, or visit our website at swrc.com. The 308-page book is available in appreciation of a contribution of $15 in the United States, $17 in Canada. While Brother Hutchings and Brother Larry won't have time to do a verse-by-verse study, the commentary gives you that. It's a comprehensive examination of the prophecies presented in the book of Daniel. As we've mentioned, this is an extended series with a total of 8 programs continuing into November. You can get all of the programs on CD or tape for an offering of $25 in the U.S., $27 in Canada. By the way, as we're approaching the end of the year, we need to let those of you who get the programs on tape know that we will no longer be able to provide them after December 31st. You might want to consider getting a CD player before then. To get the book, the programs, or both, call 1-800-652-1144. If you prefer the mail, write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. The website is at swrc.com. Next over many of these stations is a Bible in the News report. Join Brother Hutchings and Brother Larry tomorrow for your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. We report on recent news stories and relate them to the Bible. I'm Jerry Giltner. I'll be bringing you today's report. It appears it's finally happening. What is it? One of the country's biggest abortion providers, Planned Parenthood, is about to be placed under the microscope of Congress. Many pro-lifers have wanted the organization to be investigated for a long time, and it looks like their wishes are coming true, which is good news. The downside is we can't be certain how thorough the investigation will be or if the organization will come clean on what it's been doing. But at least it is a start. We quote from a story posted on One News Now's website, September 28, 2011. Quote, Planned Parenthood will face an investigation by a House committee over alleged abuses that have come to light as a result of undercover investigations by the pro-life groups Live Action and Life Dynamics over the past dozen years. Congressman Cliff Stearns, Republican of Florida, head of the Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations for the House Energy and Commerce Committee, has called on the abortion giant to produce 13 years of records related to alleged abuses, specifically its use of federal funding and its compliance with federal restrictions on the funding of abortion. Planned Parenthood, in response, calls Stearns' investigation politically motivated, ideology-driven, and a misuse of political power. National Right to Life Committee Executive Director David Osteen notes that Planned Parenthood receives several hundred million tax dollars each year. We've seen a pattern that as their funding increases, the number of abortions they provide are increasing, he shares. And of course, there have been allegations of other practices at their clinics that do warrant investigation. So, I certainly think it's warranted. Osteen also points out that Planned Parenthood is a very political organization. They're a major supporter of pro-abortion Democratic candidates. They are very, very close to President Obama and a major supporter of his, he offers. And again, that raises the question. Hundreds of millions of dollars are going into this very political organization that's really part of the overall support network for the pro-abortion Democratic establishment, close quotes. While pregnancy crisis centers that are saving the lives of babies do not receive any federal funding, Planned Parenthood that kills babies has long enjoyed the fruits of mine and your tax dollars, whether we agree with what they do or not. That seems at the very least to be inequitable. The Bible tells us that in the last days, men and women will become worse and worse. We read the words of Paul as he relates a list of characteristics that define people in that period of history. Here are a couple of them. Without natural affection, despisers of those that are good. That's from 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3. It's not natural for a woman to kill her baby. And consider what Planned Parenthood says about Congressman Stearns. That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 1-800-652-1144 or go to the website. It's at swrc.com. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.